and welcome to Africa, Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. This month, we have a special edition showcasing the 2016 Kane Prize for Best African Short Story Writing, or rather, the journey there. We had an exclusive on the bus from London to Oxford to talk to the shortlisted writers about their work and goals.
My name is Leslie Neka Arima, and my story is What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky. So the premise of the story is that there has been a mathematical formula that's been discovered, and it's sort of the mathematical equivalent of an epiphany. And with this formula, we are able to do things with the human body that we previously have not been able to do. And our main character works as a grief eater, almost, and uses this math to absorb grief from the population with unintended consequences.
You use math, cold hard math, to absorb pain.
Everything is math, really. You know, nature is math, our human bodies are math, and so why not? We can't say for sure that the solution to all of human ills isn't rooted in that in some way, and so I just wanted to play with that idea of mixing sort of the cold practical math with the emotion of trauma and grief and just seeing what I could do with that.
You really create your own reality. I mean, there is nothing else like this place. I mean, how do you see science fiction for you?
I'm going to quote a Nigerian writer named T.J. Benson. He was asked the same question, you know, why science fiction? He wanted to imagine a future for Nigerians because our government doesn't seem to be interested in the future of the youth. And so he wanted to imagine our future. And so I think I wanted to sort of engage with the idea that, you know, there would be a future and what that could look like in this alternate universe.
My name is Bongani Kona, and I've been shortlisted for a short story called At Your Requiem. It's a story of two cousins who grow up as twins or as brothers, and their mother plays them against each other. And I explore the kind of ramifications of that throughout their lives.
This piece is mainly told in flashback, but it seems that it's a bit of a confession for Christopher, who's the main narrator.
It is kind of a bit of a confessional narrative in a sense, and confession as a kind of prelude as well to healing, right? As coming to terms with our own realities, or Christopher coming to terms with his own kind of traumatic history.
So this was your, I believe, your very first short story.
Yes.
So what are you working on now?
I wouldn't be able to answer that because there's a story to all of this. I remember my former landlady had a friend who'd been working on a PhD for 30 years. And the moment you say I'm working on this particular thing, I always have a fear that it'll be 40 years before it's actually finished and everybody will be hounding me on that thing. So I'm a bit superstitious of that, but I am working on something. I don't know what shape it will take.
My name is Abdul Aden. I'm a Somali writer. My shortlisted piece is The Life Bloom Gift. My story is about an airport security agent in an American airport who gets fired from his job for inappropriately touching a traveler. And he's a narrator of the piece, and pretty much during the course of the story leads us to find out that that he was led to do that by an interesting man named Ted Lifebloom.
Ted Lifebloom, he's a little freaky, but there's a lot of description of love in this piece.
Love, obviously, is at the core of the piece, and touch and love have lots to do with each other.
Would you say it's non-traditional love, or would you say that there's a tinge of mental illness? How would you describe it overall?
I think there's a bit of mental illness, not so much as an illness as a further extension of human honesty. Ted's love and need for touch is not unlike those of the common folks, but it's just stretched a little further. When these things are denied, especially touch, when they are denied to children, certain things come about, and hence Mr. Lifebloom must feel anything in order to believe that thing exists. The mental illness I describe in there, I give it a name, and it's not there in the real world, but it's one that arises from needing things. And the place that the story happens is the US. Jobs are important. Everyone must have a job. Somehow, Ted's need for love and affection and plenty of touch also took a toll on his life, in the sense of finding a job and making a living.
My name is Tope Falerin, and I'm the author of Genesis. Genesis is the story of a young child who is the son of two Nigerian immigrants. The family is experiencing some troubles and struggles, and he's trying to find himself in the midst of all of that.
Now, the mother in your story, Genesis, has some sort of mental illness. She's not demonized in this story.
Yeah, I endeavor to kind of honor her presence in this story, because she's struggling with something that she has no control over. Nobody has any control over it, and as a result, she does some things that are negative and unfortunate, but again, she doesn't intentionally do these things. And in fact, at the end of the story, I think the reader comes to discover that she's the one person who has a revelation about the son's trajectory that he desperately needs. And so even in her kind of her unfortunate state, she's able to help him in a very crucial way.
The father in your story, it seems he's a smaller character, but it seems that he really tries. And perhaps the most revealing is when the boys ask where he's been, because he wasn't part in the story, and he says, "I don't know, I'm here now."
I think he's completely bewildered by what's happened. He and the mom play very particular and important roles in the story. The father kind of quickly abandons his American dream when he arrives. It's symbolized at the very beginning of the story by the fact that he stows his cowboy hat under the bed. It seems like the mom isn't able to leave her dreams aside, and I think it's part of the reason why what happens to her happens is because she kind of insists on dreaming even when everything around her tells her that dreaming isn't possible anymore.
Stories in the 55 met Liduru Malingani, the fifth shortlistee at Oxford University's Divinity School, to find out about his story.
My name is Letutu Malingani, and I have been shortlisted for Memories We Lost. I think my story is about a couple of things, but the one is really memory and how that gets reimagined by the two sisters, because they can't share memories, so they kind of like have to build new memories. But it's also looking at how two different generations deal with mental illness.
It's an interesting subject to choose to write a short story about.
I mean, the story began, I was having a chat with a friend of mine who is a poet, who was trying to write about her own father who's got Alzheimer's. And she was kind of like working out the fact that the family feels differently about how to help the father. And so when I saw the theme for the short story competition, I was like, it would be interesting to kind of like look at how black communities in South Africa talk and, in fact, view mental illness. And that was the initial idea. And then everything kind of, you know, had to fall into place.
After drinks and dinner, head judge Delia Jarrett McCauley announced the winner.
Of Memories We Lost by Ludidi Malingani, we thought this had a very strong sense of place. Took us into a rural community in the Eastern Cape, how traditional beliefs were being tackled and exposed in most difficult circumstances. And so finally, we chose as our winner, Memories We Lost by Liduli Malingani.
We spoke to Liduli Malingani to find out how he feels about winning the Kane Prize.
Geez, I'm very excited. Also very excited for my own writing, and also very excited for other people's writing who follow the Kane Prize or aspire to even become writers. So it's been a great week. So today was a, I suppose, the perfect ending to a long week. The one thing that the Kane Prize do is to encourage writers to write. So having been shortlisted, the only encouragement I've taken out of it is that you must continue writing. That's it. I haven't thought about the money. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. And I don't even think it's important. What's important for me, at least, is to continue writing.
What do you think this also means for South African writers?
Well, I'd like to think that it means a lot to South African writers. Not only South African writers, but also African writers. And you know, people who want to write and kind of like whatever reasons they have that discourage them, sort of like look at this and realize that they can also do it. It was out of sheer determination for me to write.
That's it for this month's Africa Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. If you enjoyed this program, tune in next month to get more in-depth interviews from the Kane Prize shortlistees.